is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all members of the community are welcome to attend. The single most important aspect of AA recovery, however, is the principle of one alcoholic relating to another alcoholic. Therefore, only alcoholics actually participate in our meetings. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would also be helpful to you to contact an anonymous organization which more specifically deals with your addiction. In any case, we hope that what you learn here may be helpful to your recovery and our understanding. Good evening. My name is Patrick, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Pacific Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism.
The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers and a main speaker. Our first 10-minute speaker is Logan H.
Hi, I'm Logan. I'm an alcoholic. Good to be here tonight, Mary. Thank you for asking me to do this 10 minutes. I qualify for this program. I overqualify for it. I overqualified at the Yankee Stadium of Drinking, Las Vegas. And, I crash landed at the Midnight Mission. And if it wasn't for the Midnight Mission, Pacific Group, and falling into the lap of a guy named Clancy, I wouldn't be here tonight. I'd probably be by a dumpster, sleeping in the back of a bar, or dead. And that's just how, that's how it goes with me. I'm not somebody who just stayed at the cocktail party an hour or two too long, or, lost a job. I blew up my life completely. I grew up in an alcoholic home in Brooklyn, New York. And it was crazy. And I was always had a lot of angst as a kid. Had a lot, that anxiety and that, I had a really busy head wondering when my father was going to get home at night. I used to, I remember laying there when he'd be coming home from Manhattan on the subway, and I always have this fear that he was going to fall on the tracks in front of the subway train. And I used to chew on the head, the backboard of my bed. And I was a wreck as a kid. And, I was a late bloomer, because I swore I would never be like my father. He must have went to 20 or 30 detoxes. He was more of a periodic drinker. And, I got to 19 and I had, I broke up with my first girlfriend, and my buddies came and took me to Poverty's Pub in Brooklyn, New York. And I remember that those first couple of shots of blackberry brandy and 2 Budweisers, and all of that anxiety, all of that depression, the heartbreak from the breakup, it was like, whoa. Whoa, I was part of life at last. And it was that vivid to me. And, from that, I knew if I had alcohol and the bar and had my friends, I knew if I had that, I had it all. Life was going to be wonderful. And for a long time, I partied hard. I worked hard. I had a lot of success in business and sports media. And, but slowly, real life became more and more difficult. Like the bar, being in the bar and chasing women and the drinking, that was the only time I felt okay. Getting up in the morning got to be more and more of a hassle. And I remember I had my first marriage, my daughter was asleep, and I used to get up in the middle of the night and get these goblets of wine. I used to love sitting. It was like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and I would just sit there in the dark in the living room, and I was just, nobody was bothering me. Just that, and that's what I looked for my whole life. Just that, that feel. Just, speaker in Las Vegas described it once. I feel like without a drink on the natch, I feel like my insides are wrapped in barbed wire. And when I a couple of drinks, and I'm like, I can breathe. And normal people don't have that kind of love affair with alcohol. I mean, it literally made me whole as a human being. So, in 1995, I was starting to have difficulty at work with the drinking. I went to came out here went to a treatment center up in Port Hueneme, and I got sober for 7.5 years. And, you know, but, you know, I always had that reservation. I had this reservation. I was going to meetings, but if I felt bad enough for long enough, I had that in the back pocket that I could drink. I would drink again. And, you know, the sneaky and insidious thing for me with alcoholism is that I'll set up a train of circumstances unbeknownst to me subconsciously. I will set up a situation where I will feel bad enough for long enough and be able to pick up that drink. And that's what I do. And I was really good at it. And, you know, so after 7.5 years, I relapsed. I had sold my business, a really lucrative business. I had money coming in for the next 5 years. And I went on an 8-year runner in Las Vegas. And I burnt it to the ground. At the end, you know, at the end of my drinking, I was sleeping in the back of bars, you know, sleeping on people's couches. I was in this crazy alcoholic toxic relationship, and you know, she had a psychiatrist sugar daddy, so it was insanity, you know. And I called my old sponsor out here, and he said, come out here and try to get sober. And that started 2 years of going back and forth. I'd get sober for a few months. I would talk to her on the phone and go back to Vegas, and just over and over again. I just kept doing that for 2 years. And then the last time I just, you know, I couldn't do it anymore. I came out here, and Tim Malloy was my sponsor at the time. And he goes, well, you know, you got nowhere to go now. No, but the sober living wouldn't take me back anymore. They'd had it with me. And Tim Malloy said, well, you know, you're going to the mission. I went, whoa, let's not panic. You know, it's a little harsh. And he said, no, he goes, he said to me, he goes, if you go in there, he goes, I promise you, you will have your life back in here. You'll own your life again. And I had no place to go. It's not like I said, oh, all right, Tim, I believe it. Thanks, pal. And dancing into the mission, I crawled into the mission. When I walked through the courtyard, I was looking, you know, the homeless there. And here's me with my bag of dirty clothes. And I'm looking at these people and going, oh, what's wrong with these people? I don't belong here. And that's all I had. I had two pair of dirty underwear and a broken phone in a green garbage bag. And I'm looking down at them. That's alcoholism. And, you know, I was lucky enough. I got, you know, Tim said, go see the old man. And I went and talked to Clancy. And I wound up working for him as his assistant for 15 months. What a gift. It's like having a heart condition, and I wind up in the finest surgeon's office in the world. That's how lucky I am. I feel to have been able to work for Clancy. And I got to spend a lot of quality time with him, a lot of quality time. And, he became my sponsor. And, I love that old man, you know, and we had a lot of laughs. And, and he gave it to me straight. And, you know, the first time I went in his office and talked to him, I said to him, you know, I don't know if I really want to be sober. I'm just here because I have to be, Clance. And, you know, I thought I was being honest, you know. I'm gonna be transparent with him, you know. And he looked at me and he goes, well, we're really honored to have a no good bum drunk like you with us. But he smiled after that. He smiled. He said, I know how you feel, kid. And that was that moment, that connection. I knew he did know how I felt, and I felt pretty low at the time, you know. And when I walked back, for some reason, when I walked back to my bunk that day, I was like, yeah, I'm on Skid Row. I'm in a homeless shelter. Yeah, I am a drunk. But it was okay because he smiled at me. And I knew he felt he was exactly where I was at one time. And that's connection that we all have in here. And I wound up, I stayed at the mission, and I wound up staying there for 20 months. And I didn't think I'd last a week when I walked in there, but I stayed 20 months because I loved working for him. And, you know, I got involved. I was driving the van and, you know, coming to meetings. And, you know, I got really involved in this group. And I tried to move to Florida recently. I lasted 9 days and I felt 9 days. I felt really uncomfortable. And I just celebrated 8 years, I'm not willing to take a chance on this sobriety. I felt uncomfortable. I said, you know what, ego aside, you know, I was afraid I'm going to be embarrassed and people get to think I'm crazy. Well, I am, but anyway, but they think I'm crazier. And you know, I came back. I wanted to be here with you guys. And I'm really happy to be back, you know, back in LA and back in the, you know, in the middle of the Pacific group and, you know, what we do here. And, you know, I have my, you know, Tom B took my case on after Clancy passed. And I'm really grateful to Tom. Thank you, Tom, for taking on my case. And he really ushered me through some hard times in the last month, you know, going through the move and coming back. And, but I talk to him all the time. And, you know, I pick up a phone and, you know, that's the key for me. I pick up the phone. I connect with you guys. Alone, I can't do this. Thank you.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Betty H.
Hi, my name is Betty Hagelin, and I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is November 28th, 1985. And Laura McSee is my sponsor. If you're new here tonight, I welcome you. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous not because I wanted to, but at the invitation of the Metropolitan Police Department of Washington, D.C., it wasn't the end of my drinking, but it was sort of the end of my denial about my drinking. I was somebody who was a blackout drinker from the very first time I ever drank the way I wanted to. That's not the first time I drank, because I grew up in a family where alcohol was considered to be, I don't know, the medicine. You know, when we were kids and we're teething, my mom would, you know, a little bourbon on the gums, that worked, right? And by the time I was 10 years old, I was the bartender for family parties. You know, I was mixing drinks. And I remember one time I mixed a drink for a lady, and, you know, she was like, "Oh, honey, that's strong." And I was like, "Oh, I didn't think so," you know, because, of course, she'd take a drink, give you a drink. You know, my family was unusual. My father's family, we owned the last brewery in Kansas. I grew up in Kansas, a dry state. I'm happy to say I'm very proud to have become an alcoholic in a dry state. And then on my mom's side, her father drank as much beer as the place could have produced. And so, you know, it was for me, though, we all knew that he wasn't an alcoholic because he only drank beer. You know, that doesn't make me an alcoholic, but our book talks about how we felt bodily and mentally different than our fellows. Well, I was bodily and mentally different. I grew up with crossed eyes, and children can be so kind. you know, and I had my fists up. I had my fists up from a very early age. And what I know now is that the very first time I drank, everything I needed to know about my alcoholism, I could have learned that night. I was 15 years old. We all met at the lake. I don't know about you, probably here it's the shore or the river or the gymnasium or wherever it might be. And we stole booze from our parents, and we came together and we put it all together, and we had this jug of, you know, stuff and passed it around. And I used to laugh because Frank J. from this group used to talk about his first drink and how it came out his nose and went out his ears. And, you know, and I used to kid him and say, "Now that is alcohol abuse. You know, when I drank, it went down and it stayed down, well, at least for a few hours." And, you know, that night I drank, I threw up, I blacked out, and I drove home. And I'm not sure exactly the order, but for the next 16 years, really, that was what I did just about every night. I called, I But I'm also somebody who never thought that I was an alcoholic. I never thought I had a problem. I knew I had problems, but I didn't. But alcohol was not the problem. I love how Clancy used to say, alcohol was not my problem. Alcohol was my solution. You know, I had a living problem. I had the disease of alcoholism, and alcohol was my medicine. And thank God for it. You know, thank God for it. I appreciate Logan's story. Thank you, Mary, for asking me to share. But, you know, my story is one where I continue to achieve. You know, I don't have an answer for why or how that happened. But, you know, I was in National Honor Society. I mean, I was a chameleon. I was whatever you wanted me to be. And so I had one group of friends that I was first chair in the French horn, and I was this and I was that. And then I had friends I was doing dope down in the caves. People say, what was your favorite drink? And I say more. I never turned down anything. You know, I completely believe in our unity of purpose and, but it's just important for you to know that I was a garbage can. You know, I was a pig, a P-I-G pig. People would give me something, I would take it and then say, well, I might say, what was that? If I wasn't quite sure what I was supposed to feel. And so I went to college. Here's the story I think that tells my, you know, about me and my ambitions. I had a dream when I was a kid, I wanted to be a doctor. Now, I didn't ever tell anybody any of my dreams because God forbid you might actually hold me to them. But, I went to college and I got a B my very first semester in biology. A normal kid might say, well, maybe I should study, you know, maybe I could get a tutor or maybe I could do, no, not me. I was like, well, obviously I can't do that. You know, and I just threw it away, you know, just threw it away. My next door neighbor was in the journalism school, and it was at one of the schools. It was a top five school at the time, and I got in with the news editorial staff, who we'd put a paper to bed at 2 a.m. We'd go find the clubs, and then we'd close down the after clubs. It was a great place to be. It was a great place to be a budding alcoholic. And at least I was associate editor, and our editor is also a member in these rooms. Senior year, I was, there were people actually looking for jobs. I thought that was sort of drastic. And literally somebody had an extra application for the law school admission test. So I said, well, that sounds interesting. And so that's how I ended up in Washington, D.C. in school. And, you know, I was in law school doing drug deals in the basement of the law library. I ended up in an Irish Catholic law firm. They were all functional alcoholics. It was fantastic. I remember one St. Patty's Day, I went down to court. I appeared in court and I came out and I looked at my watch. It was only 10 a.m. and I thought, well, the Dubliner is right there. I mean, you know, I've never come to the Dubliner on St. Patty's Day because it's amateur hour, right? But I can do that. I only have $3 in my purse. Well, about 6 hours later, one of my friends found me on the subway with a button flashing, I'm a well-lit Irishman, and went back to my office, threw up on my desk, and luckily there were some budding untreated Al-Anon who cleaned everything up. I was a serial drunk driver, and I had so many accidents I can't even tell you. And by the way, I was defending accident cases at the time. I had to call a client to report an accident. I didn't even know where it had happened. One night I was on the Beltway in Capitol Beltway coming back from, it was Halloween. I was coming back from a party, and I used to say somebody cut out in front of me, but basically I skidded across 8 lanes. I was headed for this on-ramp that had a curb on it. And the front end of my car hit and went flipped up over the top. Of course, I wasn't wearing a seatbelt. I was invincible. You were invincible too, right? And I ended up on the roof of the car. I could smell gas coming. People were coming, running, screaming, going, oh, my God, somebody's trapped. I'm like, no, I'm fine. popped open the car, stepped out dressed as Woody Woodpecker. Dracula was directing traffic, and yeah, it was lovely. I ultimately had another accident where I was arrested. I hit a cab, and he was hanging onto my car for 10 blocks as I kept driving. You know, Norm Alpley talked about seconds and inches, and I don't know why I am here, and I don't know why I'm not in, wasn't in jail. I cannot tell you why. But what I can tell you is that ultimately that arrest, which I thought was the worst thing that had ever happened to me, turned out to be the best thing that ever happened to me because it got my attention. It didn't get my attention so much that I stopped drinking or using, but it got my attention. And ultimately, I was with some friends, and we were having, it's not really even important, but I was forced to recognize my disease. I was with some friends, and based on later evidence, I believe I must have had sex with a guy, which you all know was a stretch there. But 8 weeks later, I'm in a meeting, and I can't figure out why my skirt won't fit. I'm working at an Irish Catholic law firm. My brother was a priest. I don't think I mentioned that. And so my solution was to go kill myself. But instead, the person who had been my counselor talked to me and had me end up talking to her, the woman who became my first sponsor, who sent me to talk to her best friend, who was a Catholic priest. Believe me, I was like, what is this? Like, you know. Membership drive. He told me the most important thing anybody's ever said to me. He said, God loves you and has no choice but to love you. And I know today that that has been the thing that has maintained me. I sponsor people. I have a sponsor. I work the steps. I carry on this message. I have commitments. And I work now for an international humanitarian organization where we feed the hungry, we clothe the poor. And I, you know, how that happens from where I was to where I am today is all as a result of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I thank you. Thank you for my life.
Our main speaker tonight is Carrie W.
Wow, I've been to a meeting already. Hi, everybody. My name is Carrie White, and I'm a recovering alcoholic. This is my first meeting in 2.5 years live. I feel a little emotional. I don't want to go there, though. I need 5 mouths, a million things I want to say to everybody. First of all, let me thank my beautiful sponsor, Mary, for asking me to share. It's an honor and a privilege to still, I got 37 years of sobriety. The people still want what I got. Thank you. I'm grateful for that. She has a sponsor. My sponsor has a sponsor. I have a sponsee here who brought two of her sponsees and who brought one of her sponsees. I have a lot of sponsees on Zoom right now who are watching. I love you guys. Thank you for being here, all my gratitude list girls. My sobriety date is Cinco No Drinko de Mayo. Not that I knew what was happening, Cinco de Cuatro or whatever, however that goes. And if you're new, you are. Come all the way in. Sit all the way down. Welcome to the world's greatest, and I mean global. We are global, lost and found. And the most beautiful thing about Alcoholics Anonymous, even right here tonight, whoever you are, if you got 20 minutes, I bet your face is washed. We don't look like our story. Thank you, Logan. I was just a bag lady with an address. Thank you, Betty. One of my favorite driving jokes in Alcoholics Anonymous is about the two drunks that were arrested. One's in one room, one's in the other one. The one's that's not an alcoholic is in the room and say, ah, I've been drinking so much. I knew I needed to cut down. It was really getting out of hand. Well, this will do it. The alcoholic's in the other, you know, dry tank or whatever they call them, and he's going, why'd I take Sepulveda? That's us. And here's my two favorite big lies in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't want this to be a drunkalogue. Fasten your safety belt so you're never getting out. And the other one is, I'll end with this. No, never ends. Never ends. Get the net. I could keep all you guys here till midnight easily. And you'd be having fun. I am so grateful to be sober. I am still in awe of the fact that I am clean and sober. I don't know about you guys, but I should have been dead before I got here. I love when a normal person, whatever that is, says, well, what happened? And I always say, about a million things. I didn't break a fingernail or lose my car. That happened years ago. But anyway, here we are, volunteered coming in here. Even though a court card comes, look what we do. We do turn ourselves in. And when I was new, they said, Carrie, if you can't laugh at yourself, you're missing the best joke in AA. So I said, okay. I take my program very seriously. What happened for me finally was that I decided I wanted to live, that this wasn't about to party or not to party. This was about to live or to die. Oh, and let me get this out of the way, my favorite Clancy joke. So he was sponsoring this guy, and he was making all kinds of excuses about something, and then he said, well, you know, Clancy, I'm just a people pleaser. And Clancy said, yeah, let me see that list of all those people you pleased. That's good. That's a good one, Clancy. I opened for him once at Malibu. I thought I was a rock star. I mean, that was exciting. Anyway, oh, God bless all the giants that have walked ahead of us, all the people who have given their lives, like my mother, to let me know that alcoholism kills. So me, here's my story, what it was like. I would say, what we wore, what happened, and what we wear now. I was in this jumpsuit. I couldn't seem to jump out of for about 6 years, nodding out with the cigarette. I looked like an aerial view of Vietnam. I couldn't wear underpants. They were just far too complicated, and I always had to pee. I got here drooling on myself at the Venice Methadone Clinic, walking around with a propane torch. If it melted, I smoked it. I thought I had a good evening if I'd see dry blood in between two fingers because I nodded out with that cigarette. What's that number? Let's get back there again. And I love Betty. Drug of choice? She said more. I just say yours, and then I go home and do mine, you know. And I never trusted anybody that I said, what do you mean you still have cocaine from last week? You don't even deserve it. Give that to me. I drank and used for as long as I could, and then I drank and used 10 years after that. I had a best friend, Aloma, who some of you know, who 12-stepped me for 12 years. What does she think? Alcoholics read mail? I lost my hairdressing license because I didn't open my mail for 6 years. It was like, again, just too complicated. What I want to say is that I am a child of two alcoholics. I never knew my dad, father, whatever. And he left when I was about 3 years old. I was born on a street called Burton Way. And I grew up mixing drinks for my mother and her boyfriends. And that's how if it was too full, I would sip it. I was like 5, 6 years old. And I started making one behind the bar for myself. It was bourbon. It was 7-Up. It was warm. It was sweet. It was my relationship to my mother. My mother was an artist. She worked at home. I know why she worked at home, so she could drink at home. One day I was skipping off to Rosewood Elementary. We lived on Burton Way. And I sipped her coffee, and it was all laced with bourbon. I went, oh, I get it. You put it in everything. And I clearly had the contact. I did not know the word, but it was set in, and I was ready to protect and serve. whatever that was that made me feel better than what was going on in this house. And one of those guys she married, and well, let me back up one second. So I'm the child of two alcoholics, and I'm a firm believer you don't plant two peaches and get a pineapple. So in case you're networking in here. saving a seat for everybody. Anyway, so one of these guys she married, and he moved us out to this place called new built homes and mustard fields and pepper trees, and it was a little town called Pacoima. I was just getting a handle on Rosewood Elementary, and now I'm off to Terrabella. Everybody's doing the pachuco hop. Their hair's, how do they get their hair so high? And I'm like, you know, nine, and really white girl in this town of Pacoima that mostly was Mexican, some black. I would have liked to have passed for black, but I could do Mexican. I did Mexican, and I became a mascot of a gang. They had a nickname, Suki, and I still like the lowriders. I hear those pipes go by in the street anywhere, and it's like a mating call for me. I'm like, ooh, what is it? Where is that? I love the Peterson Museum. I just like it. In case anybody saw Titan. well, anyway, be careful in there, that movie. okay, so now here I am in Pacoima, and this stepfather becomes a molesting, child-beating stepfather. I'm not an alcoholic because of that. I'm an alcoholic because I'm cellularly different from my fellows. Slippers don't bother me. Sippers still annoy me. I can spot them across any room. You know, are you going to finish that drink or what? And people say, what are you talking about? You know, like, oh, that guy, you don't just see him over there. Not even drink. Anyway, Patrick, dear Patrick, who did a brilliant job with the longest form of the 12 traditions, but thank God that we have them. He reminded me of one of his first meetings when Patrick, our reader, in case you're keeping up with me. Anybody paying attention? That he said, I met him in December at a pizza meeting, I don't know, something in West Hollywood, and he said, I don't know how I'm going to stay sober through Christmas, through the holidays. I said, just tell them you have to be somewhere the 4th of July, whoever that is. That's what I do. I go all over the place. Somebody say, you want a drink? I'm like, no, don't worry about me. It's all in here now. I just add water. Cheers. I'm still waiting for that last booster to kick in. Not yet. All right. So now I'm in Pacoima. I'm a mascot of a gang. I have a best friend named Beverly, who I want to twin with because she's the only safe person. It's not safe for me to come home. That's why I ended up with the gangs across the tracks. And the reason why I tell my story about Beverly, who I loved and adored, she looked like a baby Ava Gardner, in case anybody's old. Oh, by the way, I got sober at 40. I am... How old am I? I'm 78 years old. Thank you, AA. You've done a lovely job with me. Whew. My earrings match. My shoes match. Not what it was like. Anyway, the reason why I tell this story about Beverly, who I love so dearly, we kind of lost track there after a while. And probably about 10 years ago, there was a reunion of a lot of these girls that I was in a friends of a kind of a girl gang with, and had a party and brought me out. And I said, whatever happened to Beverly? And they said, oh, Beverly, she started doing heroin. She had two children and she supported her heroin and her children habit. She was hooking. And one day she picked up a gun. She just couldn't do it one more day. She was 21 years old. 21 years old. Now, I didn't get sober at 21. Like I say, I got sober at 40. And I'll tell you why I got sober at 40. Because I'm a clever, smart alcoholic. In case you're young, you're smarter. If you're in here, you're smarter than me. But when I was... I think 10 or 11, I was at a party for somebody, probably got out of jail in Pacoima, one of the renegades, this mascot gang that I was for. Probably Danny Trejo, who knows. Anyway, ran into him at the log cabin. I'm like, oh, and how's your sister Sandy? I couldn't believe it. Anyway, so I was out of line at 10 drinking. I was Beverly and I would ditch school and drink beer and French inhale cigarettes. And people say, doesn't that get you dizzy? I go, yeah, that's my favorite part. And then the party got busted. The cops came in. They had already put me in the back, get rid of the little one. And the cops came in. I was looking for a light for a cigarette. And they said, how old are you? I said, well, I'm fine. How are you? Do you have a match? And they said, wrong answer. You're coming with us. So I'm like I say, 10, 11, and I'm busted. And I hear my voice. I hear the voice of my disease as loud as any of you can hear me right now. And this is what I protected and served until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous after 6 hospitals. You better be careful. They could take this away from you. And I knew exactly what that sentence meant. So when my best friend Aloma 12-stepped me for 12 years, and she got sober, I used to say, Aloma, pace yourself out. What are you doing? I didn't know she was in the bathroom shooting up or doing morphine, or I don't know what she was into. But God bless her. She believed in Alcoholics Anonymous with all her heart. She gave her life to Alcoholics Anonymous. She cared so much. And she's from old school. She's from like the Donald Madden and where they go into bars and pull out the drunks and say, you're coming to a meeting. She would tell me stories. She would tell me stories about somebody laying in the middle of the aisle and they would be having convulsions. And the old timers would say, get him a donut. He just needs some coffee. There was no like, I feel for the people coming out who've already been in rehabs for 30 days that don't get to stand up as a newcomer, or 60 days, and we can't wrap our arms and celebrate you and know you and welcome you. And it doesn't matter what we say. What matters if you know that we care? Because we do. That's what we are brought up in here to do. People have cared for us. And my sponsor, who was Peggy at the Friendly House for 34 years, said, Carrie, the way you say thank you, you will never know who took care of you, is you recognize the needs of others. And that's how you say thank you. My enthusiasm for Alcoholics Anonymous is my gratitude. I should have been dead, I don't know about you, like I said before I got here. Now, Mary and I, we drank together. And then she got sober. I said, that's nice. I'm sober. What time is it? 9 a.m.? Yeah, I'm still sober, too. Good for you, Mary. And I'm taking a cake. You're taking a cake? Oh, that's nice. Let me cut your bangs. I cut her bangs too short. I killed her first year of birthday. Her bangs were like Ishka Bibble. They were up at the top. She came back, though, when they grew out. And she's been my client and my friend for all these years. And about 3 years ago in April, Peggy, my sponsor of 34 years, who ran the Friendly House, she died on a Friday. And on Monday, my best friend Aloma, she died of lung cancer. And that was one horrible weekend that I got through sober because I have seen so many people get through deaths in Alcoholics Anonymous and stay sober. And you all were the Humpty Dumpty, the people that put this Humpty Dumpty and kept me together in the beginning, and I stayed real close to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I got through that. And Mary was sitting in my chair, and I don't believe in you should sponsor somebody if you're not willing to take direction, if you don't have a sponsor. So I was like, I don't know who I'm going to get for a sponsor, and I'm fixing it. Mary, you should be my sponsor. Okay, Care, I'll be your sponsor. She's like one of the last people that has my history and knows my children, knows my husband. So from Pacoima, we're back to Pacoima. But if you're like me, you're keeping up with me, right? Oh, let me say this last thing. Newcomers. I used to think when they read the 12 traditions, the short version, I thought, there must be somebody here from that central office. This must be the business meeting or something, you know. And I still don't know what a butt-trusted servant is. Anybody? But our leaders are butt-trusted servants. I don't know. Anyway, that's fine. I do love how it works with all my heart and soul. And if you're new or older, whatever kind of time you have, if you have never done this, let me tell you, this is where I got my courtship. I'll get back to Pacoima. This is where I got my courtship with Alcoholics Anonymous. I couldn't hear you. It was want, 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 you know, all that stuff. The world looked like spin art when I was new. I don't know what the hell you were talking about, you know. And rarely, you know, rarely have we seen a purple whale. I mean, a person fail. I don't know what the, it was all, I had audio weirdos, you know. I'm like a real, like, science project when I got here. And it didn't even matter that I'd been through all these hospitals or anything. Anyway, so we go to these meetings. And I hear cunning, baffling, powerful. Everybody's screaming. I'm like, oh, I don't know. Okay, so if you're new, first of all, I'm going to change. Everybody's going to change. You're going to change. But what doesn't change and has never changed is page 58 to 60, how it works. You want to know how it works? It's written. Isn't that wonderful? You don't have to get a translator. It's written in a book. The book with no pictures. I know. Sorry. No pictures. I thought, whoo. But how generous is Alcoholics Anonymous? Oh, you don't like to read by yourself a book without pictures? Go to a big book study. Oh, you don't like the step study? You can't read all this? Go to a step study. Thank you. And you get to hear how 20 different people do step one. Wonderful. Very generous. But the most generous thing is that very first line in how it works. Rarely. Rarely have we seen a person fail. I thought, well, put my picture there. I'm not going to make it, but whatever. What do you want to tell me next? I'm writing this. The words are coming off the page into my eyes. Do this if you haven't. New, old, whatever. Off the page, into my eyes, through my heart, out my arm, through the pen, on a piece of paper, by hand, not on the computer. See how it works in your own hand. That's what changed everything for me. And now when I hear how it works, it's like such a beautiful prayer to me. Rarely have we seen a person fail who is thoroughly followed, not created, followed our path. You know what that says? What is this, the balcony or you can't escape? Are you guys in jail up there? What's up? Balcony seats only. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Means we do not have to create our own success here. Huge. Thank you. Because I ride the freeway to the end rather than tell you I made a mistake and missed the turnoff. You know, that's me. I came from if nobody moves, nobody gets hurt. Admit nothing, blame everyone. What I protect is that third tradition. That is my miracle. Because I am a hope-to-die alcoholic through and through. My family tree is soaked in alcohol. Unlike the happy campers at Mary's house, dancing on tables and singing Irish songs, we were all dead men walking. Nobody talk, nobody say, secrets. Anyway, that third tradition is the miracle for me. I know I got another case of champagne and a whole bunch of other stuff out there. I didn't want salt in my house the first 3 years. I was afraid I wanted a margarita. My kids were not allowed to say tinfoil either. That was it. Oh, no, you don't. Don't you threaten me with that word. But will I ever have the desire again to get sober? That is what is the miracle. So I protect and serve that like I protect and serve my disease. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous is like drugs and alcohol. I didn't get high watching somebody else at the bar drinking. I'm not going to have a program or have the relief or have the recovery watching you have a great program, go to meetings, and I don't do anything else about it. And it's all the stuff, it's all the intangible things that happen in here that are so magical. Higher power, who believes in God? God was my assistant. Dear God, let the dealer be home. Dear God, don't let me get busted. Dear God, let me get through this excuse. Dear God, don't let me die. I'll do the talking. Me and my disease, we'll do the talking. I'll call you when I need you. And I've had a million transitions of a higher power in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was like, I didn't want to say Our Father. I didn't have any good things with the Our Father. And I heard a beautiful thing in Alcoholics Anonymous when somebody said, you get to make new history here. New history. Look at my family. I'm an only child. No parents. Searching to just be seen, heard, anything. Get to Alcoholics Anonymous, they hand you a mic and say what it was like. Oh, I'd love to tell you. You know. So, and then I love when somebody comes into AA and they're like, I don't know if I can tell him that. I have trust issues. Yeah, you told any drunk at the bar. What are you talking about? You told them everything and what color your underpants were. What are you talking about? Oh, I have trouble in taking direction. Yeah, if I told you where there was a free case of champagne and gardenia and don't be late, do you think, let me get what? No, it's the same. It's just we have a different primary purpose. I was working so hard just to get anesthetized myself. Doesn't look like that on paper. It looks like I wanted to die. But I just wanted to, you know, my idea of a good evening was a 6-day run. I'm up. I'm doing it. I just never wanted to stop. Never wanted to die because I never wanted to stop. I had three husbands. Oh, Pacoima. Forget Pacoima. We're out of Pacoima. My mother finds me. I ended up in a foster home after I was arrested. And my mother found me because she disappeared because the molester got arrested. And my mother found me 3 years later in the foster home, picks me up by the nape of my neck, brings me to Hollywood, back to Hollywood where we started. And she's still, of course, a drunk. And I end up going to Hollywood High, and I met the Dreen sisters, Dexedrine, Benzedrine, you know those girls. And they taught me how to drink more. I like them. They drink more. I had a job after school at the Hollywood Paramount, which is now El Capitan. And then I get home, I call on my friends, you got homework? Need to, should we polish the gravel in your driveway? I'm still up. What shall we do? Go to bed. Okay, well, I'll see you tomorrow. You know, and then everybody went to college, and that was not, I had some real, I talk about trust issues. I don't trust anybody that's an alcoholic that went to college, but okay, I'll give you some room, wiggle room there, bud. People ask me what I got on my GPA. I said, GPA? I don't think I took GPA. What is that? I left algebra because they wouldn't tell me what the X and the Y was. I need to know. It was like, I don't know. So somebody introduced me to hairdressing. I modeled for them and became a hairdresser. I went to beauty school. Thank God for the Dreen sisters. I put myself through beauty school working at Bob's Big Boy at night. I was up. I needed the money. I lived back at the foster home. They let me live there for free. I went to beauty school in Reseda and then came back and, I tell this little story because it's pretty important and pretty big, actually. And this is a back again to about God and my relationship with a power greater than myself, that I am the evidence of a power greater than myself. Alcoholics Anonymous was my first power greater than myself. But there was a saying we used to say a lot more often, God brought me to AA and AA brought me to God. And I like that. That works for me. And GOD, Group of Drunks, works for me real well, too. And Gift of Desperation, that works excellently, Balcony. And I'll tell you what else is one of my favorites. I didn't have Good Orderly Direction. Hello. Made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care, not guilt, shame, fear, punishment, rage, care. I didn't know how to take care of myself. I certainly didn't know how to take care of my alcoholism. I did not know how to not drink,
How do you do that? How do you even get that desire? I don't know. That's a power greater than myself. Anyway, I was going to tell you something else, and I guess it just flew right out the Santa Monica window. Anyway, what, Deborah? She can't. That's my old friend. She can't remember either. Hi, I'm Carrie. Huh? Yeah. Anyway. Ah, geez. Oh yeah, Jordan. So I was really tired. I was having like a midlife crisis at 17, and he said, "My folks think we ought to get married." I'm like, "Really? Don't you have a swimming pool at your house? Would we live in the guest house over there?" Because when I had a night off, we would gather the hairdressers, the, of course, we know how to find each other, the alcoholics and the or the party people, not necessarily all alcoholics. And I said, "Yeah, that's a great idea. I'm exhausted anyway." So we got married, and 3 months into that marriage, he didn't come home one night, and he wasn't with a girl. He was with a guy. And I said, "Well, that's nice, but I don't think I want to work with this. And I'm getting a little bored anyway. It's 3 months done." And, okay, bye-bye. And then he wasn't all that gay for 5 minutes. I find out I'm pregnant. Now I'm having a spiritual awakening. I know I have now recreated the scene of the crime. I am now my mother, the divorced woman who's going to have an only child. And my spiritual awakening, and this was in 1963, was not all that popular, was to give this child to for an adoption because I wanted her to have a better chance at life than I did. Now I tell you this now, hold it. I ended up, some guy is nice to me while I'm pregnant in my last month that I knew from high school. And he's like, after I have that child and give that child who I'd been, he'd been taking care of me because I was in some little cubby hole in Hollywood. He's like, "Well, are you going to say thank you and marry me or not?" I'm like, "Oh, yeah, sure. Okay." I didn't want to marry him. He didn't drink. Why did I want to marry this guy? Anyway, 2 kids later, living well is the best revenge. And I get a divorce from this guy, and I married the man of my dreams, who was Mr. Shampoo, who I had met, who was the reason I even wanted to get into beauty school, Mr. Shampoo. It was like movie star champagne. Open the back door, a pot come flying out of the, you know. And I thought, he'll never complain about my drinking. Well, he did. And we drowned that marriage, and it was terrible. It got just totally destroyed. So I had 3 husbands and 5 children out of my body before I was 29 years old. And that was just how I marched. That's just how I went. And now here I am. Now I'm like 30 something, and Richard's gone. And I do want to tell you that a Loma 12-step, my mother took her to the same meeting she took me. She died in the county general hospital, and they wrote on her death certificate, pneumonia, because nobody was talking about alcoholism. She took my husband, Richard, who also died, who I loved dearly, who Mary knew, who died also at 54, oddly enough, of this disease. When I had 5 years of sobriety, I could not help him. And Aloma took him to the same meetings, and he died of that disease. And my father, I found out, died in Chicago at 54 years old of this disease. And he had had 9 months of sobriety, and he had a huge funeral, that I was told. And I was so upset that he went to AA, because I had nurtured that, not hating my father, but I love everybody in AA. Did they have to tell me he went to AA? Now I'm going to have to love him. I was like really upset over that. Anyway, I just wanted you to know that not everybody gets this. It's not anybody's business. Who knows why some do, why some don't. I'm not a better person than Richard, my mother, or any. I don't know what that is. I'm just stay in my own lane and say, thank you, God. Thank you, God, that I'm here. It's a big thing. It's a big thing, the life you don't know that you're going to have. It tells us in the big book we have undreamed dreams come true. Undreamed dreams. I have 10 grandchildren. 20 eyes look at me and call me Nana, and they love me to death. Love me to death. And my first one's 20. He had a COVID baby. She's like a year and a half. I'm a great grandmother. And I have a boyfriend younger than all my kids. What can you do?
It wouldn't have been like that if I was not even if I was drinking my mush brain. Anyway. So many things I just want to tell you. You know, I've learned so many things in Alcoholics Anonymous that I never knew. I have a better language. Anonymity, newcomers. You say the non, and non, it's helpful. You look at that, it's like M. Somebody said, just look at the anon, and then go to the rest of the word. Nimity, it's easy. Okay. All right. So when I heard how it works, I was writing how it works. Yeah, back to how it works. Okay. I used to think that it was always about the cunning, baffling, powerful. I think I probably had 10 years of sobriety when I said, uh-uh. It's about the remember. Remember cunning, baffling, and powerful. It's not those fancy, fluffy words. It's the remember. Mickey Bush, I love him. Incredibly short memory, that's the ism. Yeah. If we all remembered why we came in here, would anybody go out? I think we should all have snapshots of ourselves, you know, coming out. But anyway, keep it in your pocket. If we all remember why we took this step into the sacred threshold of Alcoholics Anonymous, the sacred grounds, I see a prayer in my heart. I don't even think about it. It says, dear God, let me hear what I need to hear in order to better my relationship with you and my sobriety. And every time I go into a meeting, and I always hear something new and wonderful. I've been going to a big book study the last year and a half on Zoom called Never Too Soon with the White Brothers. And I write something down every Sunday. I write something down that's like blows my mind. One of the things that Ralph always says, we don't look like our story. Anyway, here's another fun part in how it works. We practice these principles in all our affairs. When I was new, I thought, oh, good, we're having affairs. Yeah. And then I love the part that says, we are not saints. I thought, oh, good, I could stay here. Thank you, Alcoholics Anonymous, for point and purpose. The point is that we're willing to grow along spiritual lines. That's the point of this meeting, my relationship with my sponsees, my relationship with my sponsor, my relationship with my life, my family, that I'm willing to grow along spiritual lines. And if it's a one day at a time program, I think I got to grow along spiritual lines. One day at a time, something. Sometimes it's not honking at that lady that's taken a little too long to make that right-hand turn when I'm running late because I was separating my eyelashes that nobody's going to be looking at anyway. I love Mary's story with Clancy, who was always late. Mary was always late. Clancy, what do? I'm always late. Clancy, he's very complicated. Leave early. It's a good one. That still works. And everything I got when I was new is the same things that are important to me today. The biggest sentence in how it works for me is one of the smallest sentences in how it works. Like an order, it says. But it's not the part where it says, what an order, I can't go through with it. It says, do not be discouraged. In courage. That's what we get here in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been put together like Humpty Dumpty. 1,000 meetings, 1,000 smiles, 1,000 prayers. Thank you for the people that went out that I paid just as much attention to you. Why did you go out? So I don't. And so lucky that you get to come back and talk about it. And the one thing I have always and forever heard is that I stop going to meetings. I will never stop going to meetings. That is the one grounding thing that will keep me into the place of always having that desire to stay sober. Because I am not going to hear what I need to hear anywhere else. People say, do you still go to those meetings? I'm like, yeah, I'd still be going to those bars if I lived that long. Just be a pickled old wino alcoholic woman. I wouldn't live this long. Not me. I wouldn't have made it. And look what's happened to me in my 37 years. I couldn't even begin to tell you all the things they used to say to me. You know, like you're going to have your experiences over again, or you're going to do them sober. I'm like, huh? But I took a lot of trips. I'm from the 60s and the 70s. You guys don't even understand. There was no internet. I was there and was handed the first Diners Club card from my client, Betsy Bloomingdale. There were no credit cards. You couldn't get on a plane and go to Paris and say, I'll pay you in a month. And you're like, what? Get out of that plane. I'd pull on my clients on my ladies' shirts and say, what's the windows like in Chanel? You didn't have, like, now you see the runways as they're coming down. We used to wait for the September issue of, like, Vogue, you know, see what was going on in the fashion world. Anyway, we beg of you to be fearless, not fearful. Stay close to this program. It's all written down here. There's jewels and prayers. There's not just one or two or three. The greatest prayer is just thank you. I knew this guy when I was new, and I still live on this. He said, I'm Jewish, we don't kneel. I don't pray on my knees. I don't get on my knees, he told his sponsor. And his sponsor said, red light, time to stop. I see. My sponsor also said, I don't care how spiritual you think you are, stop on time. So I'm going to just stop this. I'll stop at this. Anyway, he said, whenever you drop something, say, thank you, God. And so he'd drop his keys and go, thank you, God. Now, I drop petals off of flowers, and I'll say thank you, God, to each and every petal. Thank you so much for being here with me and being sober and doing this thing with me. I couldn't do it without you. Thank you.
We now celebrate birthdays at this meeting. For every 365 days of continuous sobriety, we give a cake with the appropriate number of candles on it. We define sobriety as freedom from alcohol, pills, pot, or anything which affects you from the neck up. If you are a regular attender of the meeting and would like to take a cake with us tonight, see me at the front door before the meeting. And if you're taking a cake, everybody's coming up here tonight. If you're taking a cake online, email Kimberly Kay, who's over here, and Donna and Sammy are her assistants, and they work really hard on this, at birthdays@pacificgroupla.org by noon Wednesday deadline. Hybrid birthdays will be shown after the in-person birthdays. We have a custom at the Pacific Group of donating $1 for each candle on your cake. At the end of the year, this candle money is our contribution to AA organizations worldwide. So see my assistant at the door when you sign up for your cake. And if you are participating online, please arrange to donate this money, $1 for each candle, with our treasurer, Lon B, at treasurer@pacificgroupla.org. And now we will sing Happy Birthday. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear AAs. Happy birthday to you. Keep coming back. Okay, so our first birthday is for 1 year for Alan L.
Alan, alcoholic. I'd definitely like to give thanks to my sponsor, Tim Kruger, not only for his guidance in helping me, giving me the cake. Mary, thank you for letting me take a cake here. All my sponsoring brothers here, all of you in my room for helping me celebrate birthday, and most importantly, the relationship I have established and built with my higher power I call God. Thank you.
Our next birthday is for 3 years for Bruce L.
Bruce, alcoholic. Thank you, Mary, for letting me take this cake. I'd like to thank my sponsor, Morgan, my higher power, Clancy for the Structure, PG, and in particular, PG and Chill, all the people on Zoom, all of the people who joined us from Canada and UK, and a special shout out to Roger. Thank you so much.
Our next birthday is for 5 years for Onyx B.
Onyx Alcoholic. I'd like to thank God, Kimberly, my grand sponsor, Mary, previous sponsor, Sharon, class of 16, Clancy, and all of you.
Our next birthday is for 25 years for Mary C.
Hi, my name is Mary Carley. I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to thank Mary for allowing me to take this cake this evening. My sponsor, Barbara B. I see a former sponsor, Terry B., out there. It's really nice to see you this evening. And I'm just so grateful and to this group. So thank you very much.
Our next birthday for our assistant secretary for 25 years for Dave W.
Dave Wilson, alcoholic. I'd like to thank God, Steve, Clancy, my sponsees, PG and Chill, Greg and Keith, my first couch commitment, and my beautiful wife, Christine.
Our next birthday is for 26 years for Amy O.
My name's Amy and I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank Thomas for giving me my cake. He's a dear friend and we've been doing service together for a long time. And my sponsor is Paula Parton, and my grand sponsor is Polly Pistol, and they're out of town, and I want to thank them. I want to thank the group. You guys have been so welcoming to me this year. I decided to commit to the Pacific Group this year, and it felt right. Thank you.
Our next birthday is for 32 years for Ray A.
Good evening. My name is Ray, and I'm an alcoholic. Steve, thank you for giving me that cake, being my sponsor, being a great example, being a great friend, man. I really appreciate you. I want to thank the men he sponsors. What a great group of guys, and I really feel blessed being part of them. I love you guys. I want to thank the guys I sponsor. Thank you for the honor. And lastly, I want to thank the men and women of the Pacific Group. You've been so kind and so patient. Because of that, I have a wonderful life. So thanks, guys.
Our next birthday for 33 years is for Katya A.
Hi, I'm Katya. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. I want to thank Mary for letting me take this cake. I want to thank my past sponsor, Linda Jeffers. May she rest in peace. I want to thank my current sponsor, Paula Parton. I want to thank Pacific Group. And I want to thank my best friend, Quincy, for giving me that cake and walking this road with me. Thank you.
Our next birthday is for 33 years for Linda O.
Linda O'Brien, alcoholic. I want to thank my wonderful sponsor, Mary, for this entire 33 years. I want to thank my wonderful partner, Mark McSee. I want to thank all my wonderful AA sisters and the wonderful class of 88.
And our last birthday is for 37 years for Tina A.
Thank you so much, Mary. Woo! My name's Tina Albert, and I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to thank God, Alcoholics Anonymous, Clancy for 13 years of sponsorship, and Clancy and Charlotte for the yard. I'd like to thank my friend Frank Jones. I'd like to thank Sharon so much for taking my case on when Clance passed away. I'd like to thank my home group for carrying me this last year, and thank you so much for loving my son. Thank you.
So we have a few birthdays online today on Zoom. For 1 year for Kimberly D, and Linda W is her sponsor. For 4 years for Linda T, and Marilyn S is her sponsor. And for 36 years for Linda W, and Sharon C is her sponsor. We wear masks at this meeting by order of LA County and our beloved landlord, the Women's Club. It's not my decision, just so the guy who spit at me before, I just want you to know, this is the decision of the Women's Club. Okay, everybody? So there will be just the, we were on Saturday night,